to hear someone else say it to believe it. "Tell you what," said Mara, smiling. "Why don't you show me how you do it? Then maybe I'll get a better sense of when you're just hiding and when not to worry." Ben nodded, eyes downcast. There would be no holds barred now. Mara would use every means and weapon at her disposal, and there would be an end to this. They spent the rest of the day doing something that they hadn't done in a very long time, just wandering around the Sky Dome Botanical Gardens, talking and having fun. Or as much fun as could be had with a galactic civil war in progress and a military junta running the GA. The only evidence of the huge upheaval was that the CSF officer on patrol in the plaza had a Galactic Alliance Defense Force sergeant walking the beat with him. Apart from that, nobody seemed troubled. Mara wondered if all cataclysmic events in history were only noticed by a handful. Like Ben had said, prophetically, over lunch only days before, perhaps it had been that way during the Empire, too, and most people's lives were the same under Palpatine as they had been under the Republic. She didn't want to think it was true. Luke certainly didn't.
"Come on, Mom," Ben said. "Let's go find a nice spot on the lawns, and I'll teach you how to vanish."
They said it was a sure sign of imminent old age when your kids could teach you things. It was a simple thing, hiding in the Force. But then so was dieting, and not many people could knuckle down to that and make it work either. Ben was a remarkably patient teacher. After a couple of hours, she could manage a minute or two without needing to grab something solid.
"I'm sorry about Lakoff,"
she said, putting her arm around him as they walked.
"I'm sorry I wasn't very kind to him. Sounds like he was one of the best. He did it to make sure I got away. How do I live with that kind of sacrifice, Mom?"
"By making your life count, I think, so that his wasn't wasted." It was the closest she'd ever felt to Ben, and probably the first time they'd really related as adults. It left her feeling profoundly happy. The irony wasn't lost on her that it was in the midst of some of the worst events and greatest threats they'd ever faced. Times like this made you painfully aware of what truly mattered.
"Ben, you're probably going to see a side of me soon that isn't good old Mom. But I want you to know that whatever I do, however much of a stranger you think I become, I love you. And you're my heart, every fiber of it. Nothing matters to me more than you."
She stopped to hug him, and he hugged her back rather than just submitting to the indignity as he usually did. It went on for a while.
"You know why I believe you, Mom? Because you didn't tell me to trust you. Everyone else tells me to trust them, and that's usually the cue that I shouldn't."
Mara got another glimpse of the man her son would be, and the mother she'd been so far. It hadn't worked out so badly after all. She knew only too well what the stakes were now, and what she had to do.
Senate Building, Coruscant.
Jason's official airspeeder brought him up to the main Senate entrance. He could have entered the building by any number of more private platforms, but he had no intention of sneaking in via the back doors. Being seen counted for a lot, and he still had his heroic image to protect. A line of citizens waited outside the doors that admitted members of the public to the viewing galleries. Some just wanted to watch the day's business, but there was a small group who were clearly protesters. It wasn't just the Free Omos banner that the three of them were carrying among them. There was a taste of anger in the Force, vivid despite the permanent background of fear and uncertainty.
"Drop me here," Jason said. "I'll walk." He stepped out of the speeder.
"Good morning," Jason said. The group of protesters stared at him with a collective, slowly dawning, "Oh, it's really him" expression. He extended his hand to them, and one man actually shook it. "I just wanted to reassure you that Master Omos will get a scrupulously fair hearing. We've let him go home, too. When folks were worked up for yelling and seemed to want to be dragged away by CSF heavyweights, they were totally upended by having the object of their fury listen to them." Jason's patient smile met disoriented surprise. A couple of CSF officers began wandering across, probably expecting trouble, but Jason dissuaded them with a little Force influence and they stopped a few meters away to observe. More important, though, was the HNE news droid, trundling around the Senate Plaza. Jason watched it approach in his peripheral vision.
"Doesn't matter how you dress it up,"
said the young woman holding one end of the Free Omos banner.
"The GA is being run now by the Supreme Commander and the head of the secret police, and nobody voted for you."
Jason managed an expression of slightly wounded innocence. "You're right. I didn't run for office, which is why I won't remain Joint Chief of State any longer than I have to. Would you like to see something inside the building?" The woman looked at him suspiciously.
"There's always a catch."
The news droid was right behind them now. "Your choice," Jason said. "I just want to show you the Chief of State's office. Anyone else want to come along?" Jason led a straggling group of protesters, day visitors, and the HNE droid through the glittering lobby and up in the turbolift to the floor of offices where the public was almost never allowed, the seat of the galactic government itself. Niathal must have seen him come in on the security holocams because she was wandering around the lobby, clutching a couple of data pads. Jason acknowledged her with a smile and walked up to the carved double doors of the Chief of State's suite of offices. The doors were sealed, taped shut. The bright yellow tape with the CSF logo and the legend "Do Not Tamper" was purely cosmetic, but it made the point far better than the impregnable but invisible electronic lock. "That's Chief Omos's office," Jason said over the head of the HNE droid. He stood back casually to let it get a better shot of him, explaining earnestly to this random sample of the electorate. "It's for the elected head of state. It stays sealed until someone is elected to fill it. Neither I nor Admiral Niathal is moved in. That matters very much to us." The little crowd muttered and oohed and awed. It was a perfect media moment. The protesters seemed lost for words, but Jason was anxious that they didn't look humiliated. "I hope we've reassured you, and I'm glad you feel you can raise this with us, because there's no point fighting a war if we can't behave as a democracy even when things get difficult." The jumpy security guards who decided to follow him showed the party out. Everyone went away either happy or at least diffused. Jason felt Niathal's gaze boring a hole in him.
"Last time I saw anything that slick and oily was when the ocean leaked a whole lube reservoir over the aft weapons flat."
"Ah, but you're absolutely right to seal that office. Neither of us should have it."
"I believe in sharing everything."
"As do I," Jason said. Niathal beckoned him to follow.
"I have Senator Gasil in my office, and the Senator for Mercana, Nav Ekat. We've hit a small snag in our new policy."
Ekat didn't look like a woman who'd had a restful night. She didn't wait for Jason to sit down before she launched into a tirade that had obviously been gathering steam long before he and Niathal walked in.
"I understand you're concentrating forces in the Corellian and Bothan sectors," she said, stabbing her finger at the holochart in the center of the meeting table. "Where does that leave us?"
"Explain your concerns," said Jason.
"The new treaty between Roche and Mandalore."
"And you feel threatened by this?"
"Given the state of our relations with Roche, yes. Are you aware that we've been having a disagreement about export markets?"
Gasil leaned forward.
"Put another way, the Verpine are accusing Mercana of reverse engineering some of the most lucrative weapons command systems, breaching their patents, and selling cheap knockoffs to undermine their markets." "Put another way, Verpine don't like healthy competition," said Ekat. "Now they've signed a deal with Mandalore for mutual aid and technical collaboration. It's the Bugs and Thugs show."
"Are you expecting this alliance to threaten your security directly?" Jason asked. "Because if the Verpine were seriously annoyed, they have plenty of military hardware to make their point without calling in Keldabe."
"Verpine might make the stuff," she said, "but they rarely use it in anger. The Mandalorians, on the other hand, treat warfare as a national sport. As a member of the GA, we expect support when attacked."
"Roche is a neutral world," Jason pointed out. "If you were attacked, we'd have to assess the situation, but I feel this has to be referred to the Interplanetary Civil Courts first."
"So you're saying we're on our own?"
Jason would play the nice officer today, Nyathol was doing a fine job of being the nasty one. I'm saying that you should try to resolve this dispute by other means rather than escalate straight to saber-rattling. But perhaps the presence of a GA squadron and frigate might make Roche more willing to sit down and discuss the matter again. Nyathol turned her head very slowly to stare at Jason. He knew the risk he was taking.
If we have spare resources, then we'll consider it.
Gasil watched Akkot stalk out, then shrugged.
So much for the Mandalorian threat making the little planets rush to our protective arms, Char.
They did rush,
Nyathol said.
And that's the problem. If we're seen deploying a Star Destroyer every time some member state has a local disagreement, we'll open the floodgates. Not that they're not starting to open already. Policy is to concentrate on breaking the big boys who won't play by GA rules, or we'll be putting out fires across the galaxy for decades to come.
Jason braced for impact.
And Colonel Solo, you will not commit fleet resources like that without discussing the matter with me.
I didn't commit anything. I just stated the obvious.
And I didn't agree to it either.
Wouldn't it be useful to have an excuse to wander out to the rim and take a look at those new Mandalorian fighters?
If they've built any yet.
I say commit a couple of flights if we can't spare a complete squadron. If we move one of the frigates out from Both in space, that'll bring it within range of Mercana at a stretch.
Are you sure you want to provoke Mandalore? Gasil asked. It's got that extra personal dimension now, and the last thing we need is Fett making this a vendetta against the rest of the GA. His neutrality has been a bonus, to be honest.
I'm well aware that Fett has neither gone away nor forgotten his daughter, Jason said. But he's far too smart to waste his troops to fight a personal feud.
Luminous Gardens Spa, Drow, Corellian System.
So, still no new Prime Minister? Mara asked.
You're taking a big risk coming here, said Leia.
No. There's a triumvirate of the three main party leaders running Corellia until they find a new target. Sorry, I mean candidate. Two dead inside a few months tends to dampen the applicant's enthusiasm.
Well, we score for efficiency. At least we can run the GA on two.
The two walked around the colonnade of exclusive stores and beauty salons.
I had to see you face to face. You don't want Jason to arrest you for setting foot on Coruscant. And you know he would. Where's Han?
He's gone on an errand with Lando. Where's Luke? Seeing as it's just us girls talking, then I smell a delicate problem.
There was no point tiptoeing around it. Mara had as much evidence as she needed. But this was Leia's son under discussion.
Jason,
she said.
Always is. I'm going to ask you something, Leia. And if you never want to speak to me again afterward, I'll understand. This isn't going to end in a punchline, is it? You're serious?
You have no idea how serious.
Then stop dragging it out.
Okay. Do you think Jason is susceptible enough to be controlled by Lumaya?
No,
Leia said.
He's stubborn, and he's his own man.
It was the last thing Mara wanted to hear. She wanted to hear that Jason was a good kid who went along with the others, who got into bad company but was a good boy at heart. She wanted a reason to go after evil Lumaya and rescue deluded Jason, because that was easy, black and white, palatable.
Leia, I'm so sorry, Mara thought. I'm going to have to stop Jason. I have to. I'm going to have to kill your son, because that's the only way of stopping him now.
Senate Lobby, Coruscant.
There you are, said Mara, ambushing Jason as he stepped out of the turbolift. Glad I caught you.
He registered genuine surprise, and that gave her more satisfaction than he'd ever know. No, he hadn't felt her presence when it mattered.
Thank you, Ben. Nice trick.
Hi, Aunt Mara. What can I do for you?
Jason tried to do that act of dithering on the spot, the carefully calculated body language that said he really did want to stay and talk, but duty was dragging him away. What an actor. She could act too, but this wasn't the time for it. "I'd love to catch up over a drink," he said. "But it's late and I've got an appointment first thing tomorrow. Can we fix a time for when I'm free? Say in a couple of days?"
"It won't take long, Jason. It needs to be now."
"Okay," he said. She steered him over to an alcove.
"You don't fool me," she said. "Not any longer, anyway."
He tried his baffled little boy grin. "What am I supposed to have done?"
"Remember what I was."
"You've lost me, Aunt Mara."
"This is about Lumaya. It stops here and now. You've turned into something vile. And you're too smart to be conned into that even by her. Beyond dark. See, I've been both sides, and I know."
"Well, I don't know what you mean. I really don't."
"Wrong answer. I'll deal with Lumaya in due course. But I know what you've been doing. I don't buy the excuses that your poor parents make for you every criffing time. So I'm going to set you a test."
"Mara, are you okay? You're not well, are you?"
"Don't even think about trying that one. If you acknowledge the terrible things you've done, and whatever's left of Leia's son is still functioning, then come with me right now to the temple. We'll get the whole council together and we'll deprogram you."
Jason put his hands in his pockets and looked down at the floor. He still had that silly grin on his face, but it was fading a little around the eyes. "Mara," he said, with an exaggerated softness that made her want to punch him. "Mara, I think you're forgetting that I'm Joint Chief of State now, and I don't have time for this emotional outpouring, because whatever Ben's been telling you..." He was digging himself deeper into the pit. She'd really hoped he'd step back, and she knew she was just as stupid for hoping as she'd been for turning a blind eye to his darkness in the first place.
"There's no Ben in this, Jason."
She stopped her finger a fraction short of jabbing him in the chest.
"Leave Ben out of it. If you so much as breathe on him, I'll skin you alive. And that's not a euphemism. Last chance. Drop this Sith garbage now or take what's coming."
There. She'd said it. Sith. Jason's grin had vanished completely, and he looked like a total stranger. "Good night, Aunt Mara," he said, and walked away.
Jason Solo's apartment building, Coruscant.
Lumaya had never had any problem with biding her time, but Jason was becoming too caught up in the administrative tedium of his new toy, the Galactic Alliance, for her comfort. And her instinct told her that the Force was restless for change. It was late, past midnight, and he still wasn't back. Lumaya waited outside Jason's apartment building, taking in the glittering night and feeling the imminence of upheaval, like the oppressive air before a violent storm. Eventually, the doors opened, and Jason stood in the hallway, looking as if he hadn't wanted to find her there. He had a paper-wrapped package under one arm, and some disturbance clung to him, as if he had a fight or an accident.
"Has anything happened?" she asked.
"Oh, a disagreement with Mara about Ben. Spare me overprotective mothers."
"Well, she might have a point. The time is coming." "You keep saying that."
Jason walked past her and went into his bedroom. She heard him opening doors and drawers as if he was in a hurry. "I'm anticipating events like a madman and looking for signs everywhere, and nothing's happening, unless you don't count getting rid of both Gedgen and Omos. I think that's climactic enough for 1 week, don't you?"
"Mundane politics."
"Maybe. Look, I've covered a lot of ground these last few weeks and grasped every opportunity I've had to force things into fruition." The banging and scraping of closets gave way to rustling fabric, and when Jason emerged, he was carrying a small holdall. "I want some solitude to think. Keep an eye on Nyathol while I'm gone."
"How long?"
Lumaya asked. 24 hours, possibly 48.
"Will you have access to HNE where you're going? Or do you want me to brief you on your return?"
"I don't want to be contacted," he said.
If something major happens, I'll know. Just mind the shop.
Bhavin Vasur Farm, Mandalore.
The hard red soil was baked solid like pottery clay, and it shattered at the first blow of his vibro shovel. Fett stared at a stark white tracery of bones beneath, highlighted by the harsh sun.
"Why did you leave me here, son?" asked Jango Fett.
Where was he? There was no face, nothing at all, but the voice was right there.
"I've been waiting."
"Where are you, Dad? I can't find you."
"I waited."
"Where are you?"
Fett was shouting for his father, but his voice was a kid's, and the hands he could see clutching the shovel were an old man's, veined and spotted. Panic and desperation nearly choked him.
"Dad, I can't see you."
He started tearing aside the hard dirt, and the gritty particles jammed painfully under his fingernails. He kept digging, sobbing.
"Where are you?"
Fett woke with a start. His heart was pounding. Sweat prickled on his back. Then it faded, and he was looking at the chrono on the far wall. He swung his legs over the side of the bed and tested his weight on them, waiting for the pain to start gnawing at the joints. It wasn't so bad. In fact, he just felt a little stiff around his lower back, as if he'd been digging. Maybe he'd acted out that nightmare. He bounced on his heels a few times to see what happened. There was no pain. He didn't even feel that nausea that had been so routine. He'd forgotten what it felt like to wake up without it. Apart from running a temperature, he felt better than he had in days, months in fact. He was alive. He wouldn't believe he was in the clear until the Nerf doctor came back with the test results, but he knew something fundamental had changed.
"Say you didn't poison me, Jang."
He went to the refresher to shower, if a torrent of cold water from an overhead cistern could be called that, and shaved with an ancient fixed blade that nicked his chin. Fett checked his face in the mirror for missed beard, double-checked with his fingertips, then lowered his helmet over his head. The world became sharp and fully comprehensible again, with all the extra senses built into his armor. At a time when other men had failing eyesight and unreliable hearing, Fett could see through solid walls and eavesdrop kilometers away. There was a lot to be said for smart tech. He flexed his fingers and his gauntlets, finally feeling complete and girded against the world.
"Yes, I really am back."
He rode the speeder bike to Kaldabe and hammered on the doors of the vet's surgery. She had her name on a durasteel plate, Heka Meket. A man leaned out of the open upper window, looking bleary-eyed, and stared down at Fett. He disappeared again.
"Sweetness,"
he bellowed.
"It's your special patient."
The vet appeared at the window.
"I suppose I've got to open early, especially for you."
"Haven't you got any letters after your name?"
"Nerfs can't read. Why bother?"
"Got my results?"
"Yeah."
"And?"
"The cell degeneration stopped, but the lab tech over on Dawn said we shouldn't breed from you."
Somehow she was easier to deal with than Belloween.
"You know that needle was for Banthas?"
"Felt like it."
"You're a hard man, Fett. I'm glad you're not dead."
"How much do I owe you?"
"A quilt. A nice, thick red one."
Fett went back to Slave One and caught up with the news. Mirkana and Roche were heading for a showdown. It was a good opportunity to show what a single Besulik could do if the Verpine wanted to invoke the treaty.
"Fearfak, I did it again. I'm gonna live."
Lan Chevu's apartment, Port Quarter, Coruscant.
Ben sat up. He knew he was fully awake because he could see the environment control light on the wall, winking faint red every 10 seconds. It took him a while to work out why he knew the voice, but couldn't put a face to it when he shut his eyes again. It was the Sith ship. He didn't know where it was, but it was calling him. It wanted to know where he was. Sith Sphere, color orange, no index number. Last known registered owner, Lumaya.
Ben decided to treat it like a stolen speeder, the way Shivu would.
I owe Jason this. He'd never have done these things without Lumaya twisting his mind. Shows he's not half as clever as he thinks he is.
Ben pulled on his clothes, left a scribbled flimsy note for Shivu, and set off for the GAG compound to liberate an unmarked long-range speeder. It was only when he fumbled in his pocket for his ID that he realized he'd left his vibroblade at Shivu's. He hoped he wouldn't need his mom's luck tonight.
Skywalker's apartment, Coruscant.
Luke was asleep when Mara got back, and she was relieved. She slipped past the bed and selected her favorite working clothes, dark gray fatigues with plenty of pockets for storing small weapons and ammo. She had no idea how long it would take to run Jason to ground, so she opted to pack for a mission, as much as she could cram into her backpack. She checked her datapad for the transponder trace. Ben's showed he was still at Shivu's, and so he was one factor she didn't have to worry about. Lumaya's transponder indicated she was heading for the Perlamian node, just off Coruscant. Mara closed the inner doors to keep the light in the hallway from waking Luke, and paused at the apartment's front entrance.
Okay, I'll risk it. If he wakes up, though, it'll be another argument.
She put down her pack and tiptoed back into the bedroom, leaned over Luke, still snoring like a turbo saw, and kissed his forehead as lightly as she could. He grunted.
Sorry I never spotted it, she mouthed at him. But better late than never.
Mara paused at the doors and left a flimsy note stuck on them. Gone hunting for a few days. Don't be mad at me, farm boy.
Sith Meditation Sphere, Perlamian Trade Route.
Hush, Lumaya said aloud. I have no idea if he can hear you.
The meditation sphere had developed an annoying habit of asking her questions. It wanted to know why there were so few. Lumaya wasn't sure where to begin with such a vague question. The ship had been buried on Zyost for more time than it wanted to remember, it told her, and now it was curious to know where all the Dark Ones had gone.
It's a long story, Lumaya said. We haven't been in the Ascendant for a long time. Jason Solo will change all that.
The ship went quiet. It was impossible to get an accurate sense of speed in a vessel with no instruments in hyperspace, but she could measure the duration of the journey on her chrono, and the ship could tell her where its equivalent location was in real space.
Past Arcania, past Chazwa, where was Jason going?
He leaves hyperspace,
the ship said at last.
Where are we?
Hapes Cluster.
Follow him.
Jason was heading for Hapes itself. Lumaya encouraged the Sith Sphere to leave more distance between them by imagining a cord stretching to a hair's thickness. Eventually, Jason reached the edge of the Hapen's security area and slipped through.
He lands. He has entry code.
Lumaya debated whether to use the code to follow him more closely, then decided against it.
Maintain position until he leaves.
She lost herself in meditation, wondering who might be Jason's apprentice to come, when an explosion of feeling shook her as if she'd been grabbed by the shoulders and kissed by a total stranger. The Sith Sphere reacted too, a great soaring excitement that seemed to bounce between her and the ship's bulkheads.
What's happening? Ship, what is it?
But she already knew. It was Jason, slipping out of his permanently repressed force state and allowing himself intense, overpowering emotion for the first time in ages. The image the ship threw into Lumaya's mind was one of gulping down an icy glass of water after weeks in a burning desert. The sensation was intense enough to bring Lumaya to the point of gasping.
He has love,
said the ship.
He has loves there. So Jason Solo had a lover. Ship, you said loves.
Two,
the ship said.
Yes, two.
The ship could detect force users, and it felt there were two more on Hapes. Two more whose link with Jason Solo had to be kept secret at any cost.
and who would have an emotionally overwhelmed Jason clutching something soft and covered in silky fur. A toy. A soft toy. Jason had come back to the apartment with a plain package gripped tight under his arm and left with it. He'd bought a cuddly toy for a child he loved with his entire being. Lumaya snapped herself out of the connection and managed to stop short of beating her fists on the stark red deck of the sphere in sheer frustration. The ship might have taken it the wrong way.
Oh, Jason, you had a child with Tenel Ka.
Hapes.
Mara dropped out of hyperspace, still putting together scenarios to explain why Lumaya had gone racing down the Perlemian to the Hapes cluster shortly after a GAG Stealth X signed out of the GA fleet hangar by Colonel Jason Solo. There was no sign of the Stealth X. If Jason wasn't making himself detectable in the Force, Mara couldn't spot the stealth fighter any better than an enemy could. She opened the secure comm link and readied herself for a little social engineering.
Hapen Fleet Ops, this is GA Stealth X 5 Alpha requesting assistance.
That would cause a flap, but it had to be done.
5 Alpha, this is Hapen Fleet Ops. We don't like surprises, even from allies.
Apologies, Fleet. I'd like to stay off the chart, but can you confirm that Chief of State Solo is unharmed and that his vessel is undamaged?
There was a brief silence. Knowing Hapen Fleet Ops, they were checking her out to be sure she was a GA pilot and that her transponder, now obligingly active, matched their security code list.
Confirmed, 5 Alpha. His ship landed in the Fountain Palace compound without incident. Should we be aware of any special security issues?
Fleet, he's not aware that we have concerns for his safety and that we've put close protection on him in transit. He thinks he can handle it himself. Discretion on your part would ensure he doesn't try to shake me. I've detected a vessel following him, but I lost it in your space. Unknown origin, 10-meter red sphere with distinctive ocular front view screen and cruciform masts and vanes.
Mara's warning displays were lighting up. Now that the Hapens had a fix on her transmission, they were checking out the Stealth X with sensors while they had the chance. She could have blocked them, but she let them probe around to keep them happy.
Understood, 5 Alpha. We'll give you a heads up when he makes a move. If we detect the sphere, do you want us to detain or neutralize?
Your space, she said. I have no orders to detain. Feel free to neutralize.
GAG shuttle to Nob Space.
Ben had learned a lot from his GAG comrades about tailing suspects discreetly. And one basic trick was to overshoot an exit and double back. He dropped out of hyperspace and headed back coreward to Tanab, not Hapes, even though he was sure the Sith sphere was there. He could feel it, but he couldn't detect it conventionally. He could have spoken to it, but he stayed shut down in the Force to avoid Lumaya's attention. Ben made a mental map of the silent voice of the Sith sphere and got a good sense of where it was in physical space. It was close to Hapes itself. And he felt it now. So was his mother. She'd found Lumaya then. She'd beaten him to the target. Ben got as close to the Sith sphere as he dared. As far as he could tell, it was holding its position. But when it moved, he'd go for the kill.
Fountain Palace, Hapes.
Jason said goodbye to Alana, finding it freshly painful not to be able to call her his little girl.
Nice fur,
she said. She refused to be parted from the stuffed tauntaun and hugged it to her with both arms.
What's his name?
Jason squatted down, level with her. What do you want to call him?
Jason.
That's lovely. Why Jason, sweetie?
So when you don't come to see us, I can talk to him instead.
A father's guts were made to be twisted. Tenel Ka walked with him in silence to the Stealth X in the compound. You're not happy about Omas, are you? He said. She did that gracious tilt of the head, the one she must have learned to cover her real reaction when she was being bored senseless by guests at a diplomatic reception. It's very different being the focus of government after you've enjoyed the relative freedoms of being a deputy, she said. I hope it doesn't turn out to be a mistake for you.
I can always steer the attention to Niathal.
Make sure you both have different ambitions. It's far safer than both wanting the same thing.
That sounds like the kind of advice I should wake up sweating about in the small hours.
I think the phrase is lonely at the top, Jason Solo.
She indicated the blaster, lightsaber, vibroblade, and toxin darts in the belt around his waist.
I see you're getting used to the Hapen level of mistrust.
Like you say, it's lonely. He didn't look back this time. The Stealth X lifted clear, and Hapes dwindled into a sumptuous quilt of gardens and canals again.
Hapen Fleet Ops to Stealth X 1-1. Safe return,
said the voice on the comm. They'd never said that before. Being chief of state had obviously upped their anxiety status to triple red or something. But he was perfectly safe here. As Jason accelerated toward the hyperjump point, he could have sworn a vessel was close to him. He felt something in the force for a moment, but it was gone again. He checked his instruments. Nothing. If he angled the Stealth X right and shut down the head-up display, he could see a panoramic rear view reflected in the view screen. Sometimes he needed to see with his eyes to be certain. He killed the display and shifted his focus, and for a moment, all he saw was velvet void. Then the stars winked out. Lumaya? Silence. She could hide in the force, too. It's okay, Lumaya, I know it's you. But there was still no response. That wasn't like her. Lumaya, last chance. Then a searing white beam flooded his cockpit and blinded him for a second. He rolled instinctively to brake, suddenly aware it was a landing light so close on his tail that the vessel must have nearly collided with him. How did the proximity sensors miss it? How did he miss it? His four senses were flooded instantly with someone else's ice-cold anger. The comm crackled. Game over, Lumaya, he said, targeting his aft cannon.
You bet it is,
said Mara.
Hapes Cluster.
Jason couldn't fire. It wasn't regard for Mara, because his first instinct was to lock on and press the button. But she was so close that the detonation would have taken him with her. He jinked left, and she matched him, and right, and left. And she was still so close on his tail that he braced for impact out of reflex, arms locked out on the yoke. There was no advantage, same starfighter. No edge, she was as good a pilot. His comm crackled again.
I have her, Jason.
Lumaya. Laser cannons flared across his port side, and he felt the impact in the airframe. But he was still in one piece. Jason did what he'd done many times. He simply dropped away by looping through 90 degrees. He needed to put a second of space between them, and he also needed to come back at her with an advantage. As he climbed out of the loop, Jason looked up through the canopy, desperate for any reflection or hint of movement. Stealth X's had never been designed to fight one another. Their almost complete lack of sensor trace made tracking Mara impossible. That was why she was so close on his tail, too. They couldn't detect each other reliably, except through the Force, or by spotting silhouettes against the starfield. And Mara seemed to be able to dip in and out of the Force, just like him, just like Ben. He should never have taught Ben to do it. Canopy! He yelled. Ben's report had said he'd used a magnetic accelerator in the Sith sphere. Lumaya, crack her canopy! Weak shields! He didn't have to explain it to her. Suddenly he could see an orange ball accelerating toward him on a collision course, and he flipped 90 degrees just in time for it to pass under him. The next thing he heard was Lumaya's voice saying,
Hull breach. She's venting atmosphere.
As Jason came around again in a loop, orienting by feeling Mara in the Force once more, he could see a thin white trail moving at high speed toward the center of the cluster. Mara was hit. A slow leak either in the canopy or straight through the skin into the cockpit, and she was trying to land before a crack spread and became an explosive decompression. Even with a flight suit, her chances of surviving that were slim. She was heading for Cavan. He turned his attention to Lumaya.
It's okay, Jason,
she said.
I know what you have to keep secret. I'll make sure it stays that way.
You certainly will, he said, and locked all 8 proton torpedoes on the Sith sphere. This is what you taught me to be. Jason fired on her and felt no triumph or shame, only temporary relief. But he saw no explosion, no white-hot ball or glittering cloud of slow-tumbling debris. His onboard sensors picked up nothing. Where was she? Was it a kill or not? He'd have to trawl for wreckage later. Right now, his priority was to silence Mara Jade Skywalker. Ben couldn't feel his mother, but he knew she wasn't dead. She was hiding, just as he'd taught her. Lumaya was here in the Sith ship, though, streaking away on his starboard side, and he wasn't going to break off the pursuit now. She was the key to this. She'd be the key, dead or alive. Ben knew he was capable of doing either. The ship was speaking inside his head, just as it had before. It might have been talking to itself or addressing both him and Lumaya, but it was deeply unhappy.
He has tried to cause irreparable damage.
Ship, shut up, Lumaya said.
Ben could hear her, too, as if the ship's thought processes were an open circuit.
He has to survive. We don't.
The rule of ages is that I must not be targeted.
The sphere had clearly decided enough was enough, and looped back in the direction from which it had come. Ben could see it in his forward screens and on sensors, but he could also see it in his head. The general impression was that it was rolling up its sleeves and going back to knock 10 bells out of whoever had fired on it.
Ship, break off!
I do what I must.
Ship!
Ben's drives were screaming, trying to keep up with it. There was no real up or down in space, but it was like plummeting in the slipstream of a raptor.
Ship, my mom's down there, Ben pleaded. She didn't fire on you.
Masters may use their ships to fight, but not involve apprentices.
Ship, Jason made an error. Do it for me so I can find my mom again. Please, don't fire.
The sphere decelerated dramatically.
Who is the enemy?
The ship asked.
Unless I know, I can do nothing except evade and protect.
That's right, Ben said. Ship, what's your task?
Once I fought, now I educate and protect apprentices.
What do you believe I am?
Apprentice.
Who's the one within you now?
Apprentice also.
Ship, what do you mean, educate?
I teach apprentices to fight.
It made sudden sense to Ben.
You're a Sith training vessel. Why do you think the woman in you now is an apprentice?
Because she knows so little of me. Like you.
The woman apprentice in you had a shot at when we left Zyost.
We shot back.
The ship recognized him, and it decided that both he and Lumaya were novices who needed its advice and care. It had stopped his mother from killing Lumaya on Hesperidium because that was its job, teaching apprentices to fight. Ben wondered how many chances it gave Sith apprentices before it decided they were weaklings who deserved what they got. There was no way he was going to talk it into killing Lumaya. He wondered how it would do that. And she was having no luck getting it to attack him either. Ben was in no real danger. But his mother was. And not from that ship. Someone else wanted her dead. He needed to find her. He dropped toward Cavan, and the Sith sphere escorted him, with Lumaya impotent within. Ben had caught a Sith, and now he had no idea how to use her to his advantage.
Cavan, Hapes Cluster.
Mara set the Stealth X down in the middle of nowhere. No doubt Jason thought he'd forced her to land so he could finish her off. She thought she'd ditched him to get where she could use her fighting skills to better advantage. It was a matter of who found who first. She grabbed her bag and everything from the cockpit that could be used as a weapon, then found some cover while she consulted her datapad for charts and surveys of Cavan. It was honeycombed, with ruined monuments and tunnels. She secreted all her weapons in her jacket, belt, and boots, and sprinted for the first tunnel she saw. It was getting easier by the minute to disappear into the Force for as long as she needed. But now, she needed to be visible, a beacon for Jason to lure him onto the rocks.
Come and get me, Colonel Solo.
Jedi Temple, Coruscant.
Luke met Jaina on the steps of the Jedi Temple. He was dashing out as she was dashing in. He caught her arm and steered her back down the path. Where did she go, Jaina?
Uncle Luke, I swear I'm not covering for her. I don't know. And she's not answering any of her links. Why are you so worried?
Luke held the crumpled flimsy in his fist. Gone hunting for a few days. Mara had signed out a Stealth X just after midnight 2 days before. He shoved the note in his pocket. The feeling of dread overwhelmed him.
Come on, he said. I have to go look for her. Something's wrong. And Ben's gone too. I've had the worst feeling. Like she's walking into a trap.
When they reached Starfighter Command, they headed for the chart room. Luke found that he could look at the charts and pick up strong correlations in the Force, something Ben had proved to have a talent for, too. He stood in front of the banks of holocharts and tried to relax enough to let the Force steer his attention. He made an effort to put out of his mind where he thought she might have been heading. After a while, when the glowing lines and clusters of dots began to blur and lose their perspective, he found himself drawn to one sector in particular.
I'm sure she's in the Hapes cluster, he said at last.
Cavern.
Jason had expected to have to deal with an angry Mara after he killed Ben, not before. She was a superb assassin, but her Force skills were crude compared to his. Once Jason removed her, it would be easier to deal with Ben. And Luke, he'd cross that bridge when he had to. Jason checked his belt, pockets, and holster, and decided to oblige Mara. Lumaya and Ben seemed to be elsewhere, having their own showdown. Now it all fitted. Lumaya had to be silenced for what she knew, and Ben would do it. It was tidy. It was a food chain. Jason loaded 4 poison darts into an adapted blaster and slipped the others into slots on his belt, wondering how he could think such things so calmly. He approached the tunnel mouth with slow care. Jason stood and listened.
Okay. I know you can hear me, Mara. You can still back out of this.
His voice echoed. There was no response, just as he expected, so he began walking deeper into the maze of drains, lightsaber in his right hand and blaster in the other. The only light around him now was a green haze from the glowing blade of energy.
His right knee exploded with blinding pain as Mara cannoned out horizontally, Force-assisted, from a side conduit and caught his leg on the joint with her boots, ripping the tendons. As he lost his footing in the narrow passage, screaming, he found himself wedged for a second and groping for support. He lashed out with his lightsaber, shaving powdery brick from the wall. Mara dropped to the muddy floor to dodge the lightsaber, then sprang up and sprinted away down the tunnel.
Mara found the perfect trap at the end of one of the culverts. She could hear Jason's running footsteps, and she had a good 50 meters on him. She spotted a rusty metal sheet about a half a meter wide and laid it carefully across the tunnel floor, propped on stones so he'd tread on it and give her an audible warning of when he reached that point. An intense force shake of the brickwork and arches in front of and behind the metal plate weakened them, and then she stopped them from collapsing by force pressure. Trap, immobilize, kill. She could hear him breathing, and the irregular vroom, vroom, vroom of his lightsaber as he stalked, jumping and turning to be sure she wasn't behind him. Then she could hear that he wasn't swinging the blade so much. The short staccato hums and buzzes told her he was running out of room. She was trapped too, of course, unless she counted the ventilation shafts every 50 meters. Jason's boots crunched over bricks. If she timed it right, he was close to stepping on that rusty plate.
Clang! The rumbling began. She brought down both sections of tunnel, before and behind, with a massive exertion in the force that made her breathless. She didn't hear him call out. Even in the damp conditions, clouds of fine debris filled the air and made her choke.
Mara waited. One hand over her mouth and nose, Shoto drawn, and listened in the force. There was whimpering, and the chunk, chunk sound of the last falling bricks. She didn't expect the weight of the debris from a low ceiling to cause impact injury, but to engulf and immobilize him. He wouldn't be dead, yet.
An arm was all that protruded from the rubble. Through a fist-sized gap, she could see the wet, blinking glint of an eye and blood-stained face. She took her blaster and leveled it at the eye, one-handed, forefinger resting on the trigger. She had the Shoto ready in case a coup de grace was called for.
"Tell my mom. I'm sorry I failed her," Jason whispered.
"She knows," Mara said, and squeezed the trigger. They said that the human body was capable of extraordinary feats of strength when in extremis. For a Jedi, it was something else entirely. Jason Solo wasn't ready to die. Not now. Not so close to his ascendance. And not in a stinking drain like Vermin. He deflected the energy bolt with one last surge of the Force and sent the rubble erupting off his crushed and bleeding body like a detonation. Bricks hammered the walls and rained fragments, knocking Mara flat like a bomb blast. She made an animal noise that was more anger than pain and flailed for a moment as she tried to get up. The effort froze Jason for 2 vital seconds, but he knew if he didn't get up now and fight back, Mara would come in for the kill, again and again, until he was worn down and too weak to fend her off. He scrambled to his feet, staggering more than standing, and suddenly understood. It was Mara who had to die to fulfill his destiny. Killing her was the test. The words of the prophecy were meaningless, and at a visceral level, he knew that her death was the pivotal act. He fumbled for his lightsaber and thumbed it into life again. Mara was already back on her feet, coming at him with the Shoto and Vibroblade. Brick dust and black red blood snaking down her forehead from a scalp cut. She leapt at him, with the Shoto held left-handed, fencing style, seared the angle of his cheekbone, and caught him under the tip of the chin with the Vibroblade as he jerked back. She shouldn't have been able to get near him. He had total mastery, and she was just athletic and fast. He pushed back at her in the Force, sending her crashing against a wall with a loud grunt. But she kept coming at him. 1-2, 1-2, with the Shoto and the blade, and he was being driven back, his strength ebbing. He needed space to fight. He drew his dart gun and fired one after the other, but Mara scattered all 4 needles in a blur of blue light. They fell to the ground. He turned and scrambled through the collapsed brick, using the Force to hurl debris up at her from the floor of the passage, while she leapt from block to boulder to chunk of masonry, until she force-leapt onto his back and brought him down. They rolled. She thrust her Vibroblade up under his chin, and he jerked his head to one side, feeling the tip skate from his jaw to his hairline as it missed his jugular. He couldn't draw the weapons he needed. He was losing blood, losing strength, waning, flailing his lightsaber to fend her off. It was almost useless in such a close-quarter struggle. Mara, manic and panting, flicked the Shoto to counter every desperate stabbing thrust.
"Ben, I'll see you dead first before you get Ben!"
Jason was on the knife edge between dying and killing. He wouldn't die. He couldn't. Not now.
"You can't beat me," he gasped. "It's not meant to be."
"Really?" Mara snarled.
"I say it is!"
He fumbled in his belt for a dart. She jerked back with a massive effort, leaving him clutching a handful of red hair. And the only thing that crossed his mind as she arched her back and held her arms high to bring both Shoto and Vibroblade down into his chest was that she would never, ever harm Ben. Jason stared into her eyes and instantly created the illusion of Ben's face beneath her. She blinked. It gave him the edge for that fraction of moment. It was long enough to ram the poison dart into her leg with its protective plastoid cone still in place. It was just a small needle, 10 centimeters long. He stabbed her so hard that the sharp end punched through the cone and the fabric of her pants. Mara gasped and looked down at her leg as if she was puzzled rather than hurt. The dart quivered as she moved and then fell to the floor.
"Oh, it's done,"
Jason said. The Shoto fell from her hand.
"I'm sorry, Mara. Had to be you. Thought it was Ben. But it's over now. It's over." "What have you done? What the stang have you done to me?"
But she was already losing her balance, as the poison paralyzed her, and she slumped to one side as he got to his feet, staring up at him more with shock than rage or fear. The prophecy. It didn't matter now. The toxin, complex, relatively painless, was circulating through her body. Don't fight it. No healing trance. Just let go. Mara tried to get up, but sank back to sit on her heels, with an expression as if she'd forgotten something and was trying to remember. She crumpled against the wall. Jason had never felt such relief. It didn't have to be Alana, or Tenel Ka, or even Ben. It was over. All over.
What?
Mara said. She tried to put her fingers to her lips, shaking, but her hand fell back to her lap. She looked at them as if expecting to see blood. Jason suppressed his instinct to help her. It's my destiny, Mara, to be a Sith Lord and bring order and justice. I had to kill you to do it. You're going to save so many people, Mara. You've saved Ben. You've saved Alana, too. It's not a waste, believe me.
You think you've won?
She said, slurred, but utterly lucid and unafraid.
But Luke will crush you, and I refuse to let you destroy the future for my Ben.
Jason sat and waited, almost expecting a prophecy from her to help him make sense of what he'd done. But after a few moments, he felt the final discharge of elemental energy that every Force user would notice and comprehend. Ben was the last word she ever spoke.
Cavern.
Lumaya felt the Force shift subtly, like tectonic plates in motion. She hadn't realized that the decisive moment would feel quite like that.
Ship, she said. The new Dark Lord needs me. Follow him.
Then she left to prepare for death, intending to die well. Ben suddenly couldn't hear the voice of the Sith Sphere. His own name, Ben. 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 Drowned out every other sound. Even though deep in his head, it was quieter than a whisper. A summons and a farewell for him alone.
Mom!
He yelled.
Mom!
Perlemian trade route.
In the cockpit of his Stealth X heading for Hapes, Luke Skywalker felt a hand brush his hair. And as he reached out involuntarily to touch it, he knew his world had ended.
GAG Stealth X laid up on Xyost.
Jason really didn't know where else to go. He stared at the cockpit panel facing him, knowing that he should have been back on Coruscant at least 20 hours ago, and that Nyathol would be cursing him roundly. Then he felt a presence. He leaned his head against the side of the cockpit canopy, and gazing up at him from the nightmarish planet surrounding his fighter was Lumaya. Jason popped the seal. I'm surprised you could be bothered to come and find me after what happened.
You now need to be seen.
Lumaya had a new serenity about her.
Your new existence has started, Dark Lord.
Really? The pain in his shoulder knotted him like an animal tearing his flesh. I don't feel very lordly.
I assure you, it's done. I felt it.
Fountain Palace, Hapes.
Luke. Luke. Luke.
Tenel Ka had to repeat his name 3 times before he could manage to lift his head to look at her. The elegant brocade sofa felt as if it were swallowing him whole. And maybe that would have been for the best. There was an insulating gauze of numbness holding Luke together, and it took triple repetition to penetrate it. The first to stop him thinking that he hadn't even said goodbye to Mara and was asleep when she left. The second to stop him racking his brains for the last words he'd said to her, which he couldn't recall. And the third to stop him seeing in his mind's eye her scribbled note that he'd balled up and used to plug a hole in his cockpit console, and that he had now lovingly smoothed flat and would keep with him for the rest of his life. Gone hunting for a few days. Don't be mad at me, farm boy.
Luke, Jane is here.
Thank you, Tel'Kha. As long as he stayed numb, Luke felt he would function. He would gather his thoughts, see that the rest of the family was coping, and then he'd act, when he knew what to do. I can't thank you enough.
Luke, I have all my guard deployed searching the cluster.
Jaina walked in briskly, face grim and eyes a little swollen. She dropped down on her knees and pressed herself into Luke's lap, cuddling him in silence. He hadn't really needed to call. They'd all felt it. Still no sign of Ben, Luke said, stroking Jaina's hair. And I can't even guess where he is. Jaina knelt back on her heels.
I can't feel him either, Uncle Luke.
He'll be okay, sweetheart. I'd know if... Luke didn't finish the sentence. He knew exactly how Ben's death would feel to him in the Force. Ben wasn't dead. Tenelka's regal composure flickered for a moment.
Jason was here earlier.
What?
Jaina suddenly regained that edge in her voice.
What do you mean, here?
He paid a visit yesterday,
Tenelka said.
I don't know where he is now, but...
Would Hapen Fleet Ops have logged his vessel's movements?
Asked Jaina.
Any scrap of information might help.
Tenelka nodded, all gracious calm again.
I'll have the captain get all the available information for you.
Tenelka strode out. Jaina's expression was murderous.
Don't say it, said Luke. He's a total stranger,
Jaina said.
There. I had to, or else I'll have an aneurysm trying to stifle the urge to punch him out when he finally bothers to show up.
Luke hugged Jaina, feeling dwarfed by the grand stateroom, and his comlink buzzed. It was Leia.
Hey.
Leia didn't just touch him in the Force. She enveloped him.
We're coming back as fast as we can. I'm so sorry. I'm so, so sorry.
It sounded as if Han had wrestled the link from her.
Kid, you just hang in there. Don't do a thing. Leave it all to us. Is Ben okay?
Missing again.
He'll be fine. Don't you worry. We're coming.
Keldabe, Mandalore.
The fourth Besulik off the production line rolled out of the hangar to meet the scrutiny of a small crowd of silent armored men. They'd folded their arms in that typical go-on-amaze-me Mondo way, but as soon as the fighter came alive and sent dust pluming with its downdraft, they all applauded and yelled, "Ahoya!" Yes, they thought it was okay. Fett watched it with a certain pride. The higher frequencies in its drives made his sinuses tingle.
"Who says defense procurement drags its feet?"
said Medrit. He didn't seem bothered by the noise, even minus his helmet. But then blacksmiths had often been deafened by their trade.
"Record time."
"Only another 500,000 of these,"
Fett said.
"And we'll be in business."
"It's never about numbers, Mandalore. Never was."
There was something about the Besulik, its effortless hover and tilt, combined with the distinct throbbing note of its propulsion, that made it exceptionally attractive. Fett doubted it would have looked quite so pretty if it was pounding your city to molten slag. He planned to claim the offer of a test flight. Mandalore was resurgent, as Baveen liked to say, and it was gathering pace. A steady stream of Mandalorians was returning from diaspora. A few 100,000 in a week was nothing for a trillion-body city-planet like Coruscant, but Mandalore was now creaking with the influx.
Hapes Cluster.
Luke thought it was prudent for Corran Horn to take over the Jedi Council in his absence. He wasn't sure he could trust himself. He cruised the transitory mists in the Stealth X, wondering if it had been a phantom effect of the region's ionization and sensor scrambling phenomena that had guided him here. He magnified his presence in the Force again. He maintained a steady circuit off Terrafon. Eventually, the feeling of someone darting through his peripheral vision became one of someone in the same room. He rotated the fighter 360 degrees in each plane, ignoring his sensors and his Force senses for the moment, because he wanted to see this thing coming. To look it in the eye and take in the entirety of it, in the fundamental way of a grieving husband, not a Jedi Master. "I knew you'd find time for me," he calmed. Had she heard him? His comlink crackled. Lumaya's voice had never aged. He hadn't noticed that before.
"I saw no point in running, Luke. Let's finish this."
The ship was exactly as he'd imagined. Rough-skinned, red-orange, so organic in appearance that it might have suited the Yuuzhan Vong.
"I had to make sure she died. But you'll understand that sooner or later."
The sphere rotated to face Terrafon and began to pick up speed, on a straight course for the planet. Luke set off in pursuit, and the two ships accelerated, pushing their sublight limits in what Luke started to feel was a crash dive. The sphere was streaking ahead of him, pulling away. He hung on it, closing the gap, calculating how long he had to intercept before it hit the upper atmosphere and plummeted to the surface, robbing him of every closure he needed. The Stealth X edged nearer its manual's recommended safe velocity. Luke brought the fighter alongside the sphere. Maybe she didn't realize that he had tractor capability. She would now. Luke dropped back behind her and applied enough traction to slow her and get her attention. He could have sworn something protested. It was the ship, complaining deep in his mind about the rough handling. Lumaya seemed to get the idea and decelerated. Luke broke contact before they hit atmosphere and followed her down, buzzing her to force her to land on a flat-topped mesa overlooking a typical spacious Hapen-style city, nestling among trees and vast gardens. He jumped out of the cockpit and waited for her to leave the safety of her vessel, standing with his lightsaber in both hands. Eventually, an opening formed in the side of the sphere, and she emerged.
"Come on, Luke. Try to finish the job. Mara would have wanted that, yes?"
Lumaya reached up to her face and tore away the veil that covered everything but her eyes. Then she reached behind her back and slowly drew out her light whip.
"And this isn't to make you feel shame for the extent of my injuries. I just want you to see who you're fighting."
"I'm seeing." Luke drew his lightsaber, and temporary comfort flooded him.
"And this ends here."
He knew the light whip by now. He'd relied on the Shoto as an extra weapon in the past to counter the whip's twin elements of matter and energy. But he was flooded with a new confidence that he could take her with just the lightsaber that had always stood between him and darkness. Holding it two-handed over his head, he rotated it slowly, stalking around her. Lumaya raised her arm to flick the whip and get the momentum for the forward stroke, and then she cracked it, sending forks of dark energy crackling into the ground at his feet, making him jump back before he sprang forward again and brought the lightsaber around in a right-to-left arc that she parried with the whip's handle. He leapt out of range of the whirling tails again and again. Then she paused and he edged closer again.
"You hate me that much?" he asked. "I don't hate you at all."
"You killed her. You killed my Mara."
"Nothing personal."
She drew back her arm and brought the light whip crackling through the air, missing Luke by centimeters. He lunged at her again and again, driven back each time. She'd slow sooner or later, but so would he. Then as she began to raise her arm again, he ran at her, so close and that she couldn't get the whip traveling at its maximum lethal speed. He forced her back, step by step, as she tried to maintain the distance she needed. 1, 2, 3, 4. She blocked him, handle held this way, then that, using the whip like a short lightsaber to deflect him. But Luke didn't pause or shift direction to wrong-foot her. He drove her like a battering ram toward the edge of the mesa, pushing her within meters, then a step of the edge. Lumaya held the whip handle in both hands like a staff and blocked his downward sweep. For a moment, they were locked in a stalemate, pushing against each other and grunting with the effort, with only the sounds of exertion, because they had nothing left to say to each other. Her rear foot began to slide backward as she struggled for purchase. The edge of the mesa was cracked and fissured. The smooth, glittering stone began to crumble. Luke reached out and caught her hand as she fell, whip tumbling and bouncing down the steep rock face into oblivion.
I'd never let you fall, Luke said, and pulled her back to safety. As she straightened up, he looked her in the eyes, calm, eerily calm, and swung his lightsaber in a single decapitating arc. Now he could breathe again.
Cavern, Stormwater Tunnels.
Ben sat in the tunnel with his mother for a long time, and the fact in itself was the start of his investigation. At first, he deluded himself that she was in a deep healing trance, even though the Force never lied, and the void that had opened in it would have been felt and understood by every Jedi. He'd run straight to her side, through country he didn't know, and found her. He wanted to think she wasn't dead because she was there, still much as he'd last seen her except for the blood and scrapes of a new fight. So he sat with her, waiting. He wanted to clean her face and make her beautiful again, but his GAG training said not to remove evidence, not to tamper with a crime scene. Ben, the 14-year-old son, lost and grief-stricken, willed his mother just to be in a deep trance. Ben, the lieutenant, knew better, but didn't mention to his child self, and was careful to note everything around him, take holo images, make notes of smells, sounds, and other ephemeral data, and begin to form a logical sequence that would tell him how his mother had met her death. He was still sitting there, taking in every pore of her skin and every speck of brick dust on her jacket, when he heard someone picking his way over debris toward him. He couldn't feel the person in the Force. "Hello, Jason," he said, and turned to look at him. Jason's mouth opened slightly while he stared first at Mara, a long, baffled stare, and then at Ben. He reached out his hand to him. "It's okay, Ben. It's okay. We'll get whoever did this. I swear we will." Ben was still shut down, hiding his Force presence, but Jason had found him. It was time to go to his father. He wanted to be with him now. Maybe the killing of his mother had left a mark in the Force that Jason had followed. Ben considered the possibility that he was too upset to notice it himself. He made a careful note of it anyway.
The Oyu Bat, Keldabe, Mandalore.
Venku, Kadika, came up to Fett and Myrta in the tap cap and gestured over his shoulder.
"He says he'll do it," said Venku. "He didn't want to tell you he could read the stone there and then, in case he couldn't. He hates disappointing people." The old man who'd come to stare at Fett with Kadika the other day walked slowly across the tap calf. He peeled off his gloves and held out a frail hand dappled with age.
"I can do it," he said. "Let me hold the stone."
Myrta looked hesitant, then took off the necklace to hand it to Fett. The old man folded his fingers around it and stood staring at his fist, his breathing slow and heavy. After a moment, the old man put the Heart of Fire on the table while he removed his helmet. He had a fine-boned, thin face and a wispy beard that was whiter than his hair, which still showed traces of sandy blonde. He was sweating, picking up the memories and traces of time embedded in the stone's molecular structure seemed to be exhausting him.
"It doesn't give me memories in order," said the veteran. "It's all random, like flashbacks. I see images, hear sounds, smell aromas and so on. Making sense of it isn't easy."
He laid his helmet on the table and picked up the stone again, this time pressing it between both palms. Venku put a steadying hand on his shoulder, and Fett felt inexplicably uneasy.
"Do you want me to find acts of violence?"
Fett glanced at Myrta, not for agreement, but because he couldn't help it. Her brow was creased in a little frown, dry-eyed, focused. Not a pretty girl, but a good strong bone structure.
"You'll find plenty of that," she said. "She was a bounty hunter."
"You're not in here, Myrta,"
said the old Mondo, eyes tight shut.
"She died before I was born. I want to know who killed her."
There were a few more people now in the tap calf than there had been. Fett indicated the door with a jerk of his thumb.
Out. I'll let you know when you can finish your drinks.
She wore this all the time.
The old man looked almost in pain, and Venku squeezed his shoulder.
She was angry a lot of the time. Scared, too. There are so many people passing through here. But I keep coming back to a chart of Faida. Red skies, and someone she was following. Resada? Resoda?
Myrta didn't blink. She seemed transfixed.
Grandma didn't tell anyone where she was going, or who she was hunting.
The man opened his eyes and took a rasping breath.
Faida! Whatever it was, it happened on Faida.
He jerked back and stared at the stone.
And she fought to hang on to this. She fought hard.
Fett managed not to swallow. He was sure they'd all hear it.
She lost.
I want to know,
said Myrta. Venku stepped in.
He's had enough. Maybe later.
He retrieved his helmet and tried to steer the old man away.
Come on.
I don't know about the when,
the old man said, pulling from Venku's grasp.
But I know it's Faida. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry.
He handed the stone back to Myrta, placing it in her cupped palms with both hands, as if it were a live fledgling. Fett had never been comfortable around that mystical kind of thing. He simply observed.
It's okay,
Myrta said.
You've told me a lot, and I'm grateful. Let me buy you an ale.
Maybe another day, Neradika, Venku said. But thank you.
Myrta watched the door close.
Drink up, Babuir,
she said.
I want to go and do some digging about Faida.
Galactic Alliance warship Ocean on station just beyond Corellian space.
It's awfully good of you to join us,
said Admiral Niathal. Jason walked onto the bridge and tasted the mix of emotions around him, ranging from vague interest to nervousness.
I was very sorry indeed to hear of your loss.
Jason nodded politely. So Corellia seems to have been very quiet in my absence.
They were waiting for your return. That push on the core looks imminent. They'd hate you to miss anything.
Niathal, annoyed or not about his extra day or so of absence, seemed to have an air about her of someone who was suddenly more comfortable with her new role, as if she'd taken advantage of his back being turned to forge fresh alliances and consolidate her power. Jason wandered over to the bridge holochart that showed the entire Corellian theater. They still had a lot of ships. There was a limited action going on the coreward side of the chart. It always struck Jason as over-detached to show real-time life-and-death struggles as charmingly aesthetic and silent graphics. Is this current?
Yes, sir, said the officer of the watch. Updated once a minute.
I think we're missing something, Lieutenant, Jason said, dipping his fingertip into the maze of light to make his point. Look, what you have here is actually a flotilla of corvettes. And this destroyer here will move into this position, because she's actually operating a... He trailed off, aware of the raised eyebrows and puzzled looks he was getting, but bathed in the growing warmth of revelation. I can see all this. Colonel Solo, Jason thought, had just had the epiphany of his life. It's true. Lamaya was right. Oh, this is exquisite. I was blind before. How did I ever think I could succeed as a commander without this? Lumaya had promised him a battlefield awareness and judgment that made ordinary battle meditation look like a finger painting. To sense and coordinate by the power of his mind and will alone, a power that only came to fruition in the Master of the Sith. It's me. It really is. It was Mara's sacrifice after all. I accept that now. But I still don't understand the prophecy, and I don't like what I can't understand. He was a Sith Lord, Now his work could truly begin. It had happened, and it was beautiful.
Jedi Council Shuttle, Hapes Cluster.
Luke was grateful for something he still couldn't understand. He paused before he walked through the doors to the compartment, taking a few deep breaths. Silgal looked up as he came in and moved as if to leave. Mara. No, Mara's body lay draped from the neck down in a plain white sheet on an examination table. "It's okay, Silgal," he said. "I don't need to be alone with her."
"Oh, yes, you do, Luke,"
she said softly.
"And I can come back later."
"I don't understand it," he said. "But I get to hold her one last time, and I wondered if I ever would. I can't tell you how grateful I am." He couldn't see Silgal's face now. His eyes were hot and brimming. She patted his arm.
"You thought she would become discorporeal," she said.
"We talked about it once or twice. I thought she might choose that when the time came. I'm glad she changed her mind."
"She certainly made sure we had evidence."
Silgal paused for a second, inhaled sharply, and started again.
"It was poison. One I've never seen before. But don't doubt that she also wanted you to be able to say goodbye."
Silgal turned and hurried out. Luke couldn't speak or even look away from Mara, and he spent a long time staring into her face. If her eyes had opened, and she asked how long she'd overslept, he wouldn't have been surprised. He lifted the sheet to clasp her left hand, and it was just the chill that made him flinch. After a while, the skin felt warm from the heat of his own body. Even when he felt Ben walking toward the compartment and heard him walk softly across the deck, he didn't turn around. He reached out his left arm so Ben would walk up to him and accept the embrace while Luke watched over Mara. "Hey, sweetheart," he said to her. "It's Ben."
"I'm sorry you couldn't find me, Dad," he said. "I just had to go to her and be there."
It was the first time Luke had spoken to Ben since before Mara had left. It felt like the first time in ages, in fact. Luke tried to think about what it must have been like for Ben to stand guard over his mother's body for a day or so, alone and scared. But he's still too mired in his own grief and shock.
"Dad, I know she's telling us something. I've been thinking about it all the way back."
Poor kid. Luke didn't quite understand what he meant, but they could talk it through later. He was proud of his son's strength and dignity. Ben could take the other news, too. He did a man's job now. "Anyway, I got Lumaya."
"Yeah?"
Ben sounded surprised.
"What do you mean, got?"
"I killed her. I won't dress it up. I owed it to Mara to give her justice." Ben was totally silent. Luke felt a small disturbance around him, and his muscles stiffened.
"Dad?"
"I know. Legal process and all that. But legal process..." "Lumaya said she had to... well, a life for a life, that's all."
Dad, it wasn't Lumaya."
"It was, she said." What exactly had Lumaya said?
No, it can't be, because I was right next to her at the moment Mom died, nowhere near the scene. We'd landed on Cavan, both of us. She was still in the Sith Sphere."
Luke heard Ben's voice from a long way away, and everything was upended again. It wasn't her. It wasn't Lumaya.
Mandal Motors Landing Strip, Keldabe, Mandalore.
Boba Fett meshed his fingers to push his gloves back tight on his hands and looked up at the open cockpit of the Besu Leak. Under his visor, he allowed himself an intensely private, broad grin. Baveen applauded, laughing.
"Mondo boys on tour. Come on, Bobica. Take that jetpack off before you get in, or you'll have a nasty involuntary ejection at altitude."
Spirits were high. Fett hadn't led a Mandalorian strike force since the Vongi's War, as far as he could recall. There might have been others, but that was the big one, the one that counted. There were cheers of Oya Manda as Besulik prototype fighters were rolled out from the hangar. People were taking holo recordings and pointing out the finer points of the airframe to their kids. The mood around Fett felt like a hearty blend of nostalgia and optimism for the future, which was perhaps inappropriate, considering that they were about to violate Mercana's sovereign territory, only temporarily, of course, and bomb a couple of its factory complexes into hut space. It was all being done considerately. He'd made a point of sending a warning to factory staff and residents in the likely blast zone to evacuate well in advance. Fett was due to be the last pilot to embark, so he watched the other pilots getting into their cockpits.
Baba Weir,
called Myrta.
Hey, hang on! Parsol!
Fett turned. Myrta was running across the field, datapad clutched in her hand. Myrta looked distraught. Fett automatically did a quick scan around the crowd to make sure everyone whose survival mattered to him was still there and in one piece. Myrta was clearly bearing bad news that couldn't wait.
Ah, well, it happens.
Baba Weir,
she panted.
I want you to be really calm about this.
Fett said nothing and just pointed to his visor.
I'm not sure how to tell you this.
She brandished the datapad as if she wanted to show she had evidence and that she wasn't kidding.
You know I started going through the Faida stuff?
Yeah.
I did a search for all the archive material for names like Rosada and Rosoda.
Fett could see he was going to have to drag it out of her a grunt at a time.
Yeah.
Rizodar, gangster. Dead gangster, in fact. Died around 38 years ago. That's the name stored in the Heart of Fire.
That's going to be a significant date, I assume.
It is. I found he had an outstanding estate, which is what Faida calls leaving stuff of value without a will or anyone to claim it. The state can't claim it, so they store it. The state lawyer's really annoyed about still having to store stuff, and he says if we want to file a claim, he'll be a happier man. It'll take some time.
Myrta, just tell me the seriously bad bit.
She handed him the datapad. The screen was already set to show images of what was stored in Rizodar's lockup, all numbered by the Inheritance Court Division. Fett thumbed through them.
Just look for the carbonite slab, Baba Weir.
Fett didn't like the sound of that. When he got to it, he couldn't quite make out the contours, so he magnified the image.
Oh, Fearfek. What do you need for me to get this released?
Fett was sure his voice was shaking.
Credits? Signature?
Is that it?
Myrta demanded.
Just tell me.
1,000 credits.
I'll pay. She's my ex-wife, after all.
Sintus was alive. Sintus Vell, his first and only wife, was alive, provided nothing had gone wrong with the carbonite process.
Captain's Day Cabin, SSD, Anakin Solo.
I see it now. I know what I loved most and what had to be killed.
Jason had laid on his bunk for hours, trying to slot the last piece into the puzzle that tormented him. It was the prophecy. It didn't fit. He will immortalize his love.
It was only when Jason considered that he might not refer to himself that he started down a complex path that showed the prophecy in its multifaceted complexity. It didn't just have one meaning, it had many. And this is why I'm now Lord of the Sith.
He wasn't the same Jason Solo who was shocked when Lumaya had told him he was destined to be a Sith Lord. If he looked back far enough, Jason saw its beginnings in Vergere's oddly concerned avian eyes as he suffered physical torment that had changed him forever, showing him that there was nothing he couldn't endure and pass beyond if his will wanted it. And he'd killed not a person he loved, but something precious whose absence he was going to find very hard to handle. It was already searing a hole in him. It had mattered. And it still had the appearance of being alive, but it was walking dead. What he'd loved and yet killed was Ben's admiration and devotion to him. He will immortalize his love. where immortalized means dead. Jason got up and looked at his reflection in the mirror on the bulkhead again. He'd studied it as if looking for changing symptoms, hour by hour, to see if his Sith status were manifesting itself in his flesh. He didn't look any different. He picked up the black GAG helmet that he rarely wore, rotated it between his fingers, and felt an odd queasiness in his gut as he put it on. It was standard GAG trooper issue. Flared jaw section with a dispersal gas-proof filter, the visor a single shallow V-band of toughened duroplast, just a basic tool of the job. It wasn't much different from the functional helmet troops had worn for decades. But I don't need this, do I? He stood in front of the polished Durasteel bulkhead. The black outline in front of him was smeared and hazy, a mere impressionist suggestion of what he was. He could hardly look. He was everything his enemies said he was. He was embarrassed. Yes, the embarrassment overshadowed any guilt. Jason took a breath and stepped two strides sideways. He was now looking into the mirror set into the bulkhead of his day cabin again. Crystal clear, sharp, merciless. He gazed at an image of all-encompassing black. He knew what people said behind his back, that he was trying to emulate Vader. So, I'm proud of my grandfather, but not blind to the weaknesses that brought him down. But that was wounded pride speaking. I have to be beyond that now. He had to be beyond fear of small consciences, and even beyond the hatred that would make Ben Skywalker a strong, worthy, and terrifying successor to the title of Dark Lord. But that would be years in the future. Now was the time for a man who'd once been Jason Solo to shoulder that responsibility for the galaxy's sake. Jason took off the helmet, looked into his own eyes, and didn't flinch. "Kydus," he said. "My name is Darth Kydus." This is Mark Thompson. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars: Legacy of the Force, Sacrifice by Karen Travis. This program was produced, directed, and abridged by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Jacob Bronstein. Star Wars: Legacy of the Force, Sacrifice is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2007, all rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production Copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation, all rights reserved.